This is CISO to CISO, a live podcast focusing on information security, leadership, innovation, and more. Brought to you by Altitude Networks, data security for the cloud.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the CISO to CISO webcast. I am your host, Michael Coates. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Altitude Networks and former CISO of Twitter. So that's my ticket to get here to the CISO discussion, but super excited for our guest today. Welcome, Emilio. So happy to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me. Definitely excited to chat. I know it's been something we've been planning for quite a while.
Yes, definitely. So a little bit of background on Emilio. I can't wait for you to share more, but Emilio is the CISO at Datadog, was a former VP of security at Hulu, and then quite a bit more experience in the field before that. So we're going to have a really interesting discussion today. But Emilio, tell us about your journey to becoming a CISO. How did you get there? It's a very different path for everyone. And I think it's pretty cool the different ways people get into that role.
Yeah, for sure. I think how I got, I guess I can get started with how I got into security, which caveat, it was a different time, right? And something that I'm very cognizant of, that getting into the industry, that I think is something we're going to talk to a little bit later, is much different than what I was, right? In the early 90s, mid-90s, there was a lot of interest in security, right? A lot of information out there. So when I was exposed to the online world, I naturally gravitated to how do I get information that isn't just there, and how do I learn from other people, right? So you could get into security back then by reading a bunch of text files, BBSs, and IRC channels, and what have you. So I guess in a way it was easier than it is now and less pressure. But I come from a software background, right? So I have a computer science degree, been writing software for many, many years, started super early, and naturally gravitated to getting a good understanding of and curiosity for how applications work. Back then, I remember IRC was a bigger thing than it is now. So finding bugs in IRC daemons and triggering those to crash a server was like what I did for fun. And so sorry if anyone attending or watching this, you know, was part of that. But it was just that curiosity, right? And after a while, I took it seriously and made it a career. I worked at the NSA when I was in college, doing a semester at work and a semester back in school until I finished my degree. And then from there, I always wore like multiple hats, right? So while in college, before NSA, I worked for an internet provider and then a cell phone carrier, and I was wearing multiple hats doing development, but also, oh, you know, security, maybe you should do some security for us. Things like SQL Hammer and all that stuff were impacting back then. So it was cool to play with those things, but also deal with the response of it. So naturally move up the ranks there, did consulting, security consulting for a little bit. And through that, I met PlayStation, who was interested in growing the team and building a software security program. So I joined to do that, and did that for a couple of years and grew the team, and it's grown since then. But I think that the progression towards CISO was that I always had an inclination for how do we solve problems together, right? An understanding more of the why we're doing things and explaining the why and working with people to sort of like go through that hump of understanding the why and getting to the point where we're wanting to work together. And I think that naturally led me to grow a team, build teams, and then take on the CISO role, because, you know, that is what a CISO is there to do, right? It's more by influence than by extent rather than execution. So building relationships and understanding the psychology behind of what are the needs of the organization and the teams, and how do we meet them halfway so we can get some value, but they also get some value, right? So I think that's how I got to be where I am, and I'm grateful to do it and be where I am right now. But it's more about solving problems and working with people than the technical skill set that got me to the CISO role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fascinating, because many of us start with that technical tinker mindset, but I feel like it's very much, well, how do you solve this problem? You're trying to pick it apart, and it's got the the mystery of the technical details. I mean, we could, of course, you could read the manual, and maybe you do, but the manual is often wrong. And so it's very much like, let's figure it out. And that mindset, sometimes I think it's just fascinating. It translates into the, well, how do we solve bigger problems that then involve humans? And man, I certainly found that's like a whole new challenge, because the humans don't operate the same way the computers do. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of more variables to consider when it comes to humans, right? Put it in computer terms. But for me, it was, I always wanted and build organization and teams where you can just plug my teams in any part of the organization and they will fit in and work well with, you know, the stakeholders. And that's the kind of relationships that I like to build. And once you open those doors, in a way, from a continuity standpoint, the CISO can go elsewhere and those relationships stay, right? And I always think that that's important. But yeah, working with people, you have to consider, especially with what's happening this year, right? You have to be conscious of the fact that there are a lot of more external pressures than just work. And companies are growing, but also identifying the pandemic as a business risk that we need to be cognizant of. And how do you grow within that and the pressures they're in? So, but yeah, dealing with humans, it's much different than computers. And computers, I wish a world will be binary and it's not, right? Security, it works in all shades of gray, right? So we have to be comfortable with that.
Yep, that's best. Yep, agreed. Let's see. So we have had the opportunity to get together. So graciously flown to where we are on location. This webcast is being sponsored by Altitude Networks. Very briefly, Altitude Networks is solving the challenge of data security in the cloud in collaboration platforms like G Suite and Office 365. So if you're sharing documents and wondering who has access across your company, wondering how you do secure offboarding in the cloud, that's our world. So check us out at our website. And Emilio, this location that you chose for us to go to, first class flights, of course, where in the world did you take us? Where are we?
We are in Madrid, Spain right now. So we're enjoying some coffee out in the, what it appears to be the empty streets of Madrid. So it's a very, very, very suiting for today's times, but it's a nice Spanish coffee for a good price and just having a good chat.
And is Madrid a location you've been to several times before?
Yes. So I've actually been once. I have family there, but I went to Madrid when I was 11 or 12 and haven't been there since. And we're planning on hopefully going back, but definitely loved it. And would love to go again and see how much has changed in the last, many years since I've been there, and how it's changed with what's going on. But, you know, this is the typical Madrid where you can actually go enjoy a coffee or snacks out in the street somewhere and spend the whole day there if you want to, right? That's the kind of laid back vibe that I enjoy.
Yep. I think we all could use that, that laid back coffee, sit in a chair, just chill. That would be good.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, one thing that, as I think about the journey you've had and some of the items you mentioned, that movement from a very technical security person into leadership, it's a path that many people have taken, and we've seen the security leadership role elevate. Previously and years before, it's kind of in this IT org, buried inside the organization. Maybe they're like the head security nerd, but now it's moving up into leadership and we're trying to have a seat at the table. But I feel like there's more for us to do. What has your path shown you? And where do we think we need to go to actually have InfoSec leadership at the company level?
Yeah, that is true, right? We've historically been a part of technology or a part of IT. And I think functionally, we most of us still report up that chain, right? But organizationally, some of us and continually see to grow, have a seat at the table and have conversations and participate in meetings where business-wide decisions get made. I think, a couple of things is leadership is about people, right? And we touch up on that, right? You have to understand that we get motivated by growing people and by working with people. But ultimately, you know, I think the biggest sort of hurdle that mentally we have to go through going from a deeply technical role into a leadership role is that your area of concern is just one area of concern of the business, and there are many others, right? And your area might not be a priority right now, and you have to be okay with that, right? You know, case in point, you know, you can be the most secure company in the world and make $0 revenue, and then for what's the point, right? So, what's actually causing you to not increase or gain revenue should be a priority at the moment, right? So I think understanding that helps a lot. So when you do have a seat at the table, you're not just the security person in the room, right? Saying like, well, this is all everything that's going on with security. You have business conversations, right? You know, my recommendation to leaders and CISOs is, you know, partner with the sales team, understand what their challenges are. How do they actually go to market? How do they sell? Partner with marketing. What are we hearing from research or seeing from research and customer feedback and support teams? Get to know your company and business and get to understand what drives it. Plug in with customers and understand that, because then you become part of the business and not just like focus on security, right? Again, it's just one of the concerns that a company has to deal with. So that's what I've, you know, learned. And actually I really enjoy doing that, right? I think, you know, being doing security for so long, it kind of becomes, it's not like we're solving new problems. We're solving different versions of the same problems, right? You talk inventory management or asset management, change control, configuration control, right? Access controls. They're the same problems all over the place, right? It's just a different iteration of it because of the advancements in technology. But I like to learn new things, and understanding how the business moves and how it breathes is really what motivates me. So I highly encourage people to get involved in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your notion of we're solving kind of the same problems in different variations, I so agree. Like the core concepts of security keep holding true. Like you need to understand what stuff you have to protect. You have to understand where it is. You have to do minimum access control, but the way in which you do that keeps changing as technology changes, as the organization keeps changing. You know, some of the things that always plexed us was just how do we do that at scale? How do we have a automated system that can work? Because the naive way is to say, well, we'll just do it by humans. And man, that doesn't work. That slows your organization to a crawl.
Yeah. You know, there's one reality that security will never have. And I've seen this, you know, and I've been lucky enough to have security programs that have been well supported and budgeted for, and you will never have enough people, right? But even if you look at engineering or product development, if you're a product company, you will never have enough people to build all the products that you want and at the scale that you want. So you have to look for efficiencies through automation, repeatable process, or having other teams own certain tasks that historically security has owned, right? And building mm-hmm. champions and scaling the program that way. So you have to get really creative. So yeah, absolutely agree with you.
Yep. So as you're looking at the transition in mindset from, well, many years ago, your transition, but your basis in very technical knowledge, this understanding of what a security leader needs to do, you've walked into a new job. So you're in your first 6 months and you're probably taking it all in, drinking from the fire hose. How do you process that? How do you prioritize it? What does your first 6 months, what do you think it will look like? And I guess maybe we can come back in a few months and ask what it did look like.
Yeah. And I'm not going to be like what we've seen in the news and what have you. Don't quote me on what I just said, please. You know, to me right now, the first few months is really getting to meet the people, understanding the business, where is it that we're trying to go, what's holding us back, right? Luckily, Datadog is a high growth company, right? So there is also the notion of you can't just wait 6 months before you start making influence and driving changes, right? So there's a little bit of acceleration there that is needed because of our growth. So really for me has been like, okay, what are the things that are really holding us back and what changes do we need to introduce, right? To drive those outcomes. And that's what I've been going through, right? So meeting people, like I said, And by meeting people, I mean way outside of the security team, right? I'm still meeting the team and continuously to meet and have one-on-ones. But my stake, my peers, leaders, you know, board, and like I said, sales, marketing, customer support, and all those teams, and then sort of come up with a plan for what are the things that we need to do, but with a mindset or the hindsight that, you know, I can't wait 6 months. I have to start making it changes, which is actually some pressure, right? As an individual is a lot of pressure to join an organization to say, okay, I only have like 18 weeks before I start influencing some changes here, right? Or whatever it is. But that is a value and the benefit of having a high growth company, right? Where you have that opportunity. So what I think 6 months are gonna look like, it's really just, building out capabilities that maybe they aren't at the level that we need to be. And being in a high growth company, right? 6 months from now, the company is not going to be the same. So, you know, basically keeping up with the change organizationally as well. And how do we meet that on the security and compliance side? So, I also oversee IT, right? So what does 6 months look like from us from an IT standpoint and hiring standpoint and how many, you know, procurement and how much lead do we need to have there? So a lot of learnings and we just have to get ready for it. But I don't know. I don't have a clear picture of what 6 months is going to be because it's not set in stone, but definitely building out capabilities that we might not have and hopefully a lot of hiring in the future as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I didn't know this, but you just mentioned that you also have IT in your reporting structure. Yeah. So that's fascinating. That's a model I'm seeing actually more and more. Were you surprised when you were walking in and seeing that was the proposed approach, or are you relieved?
I wasn't surprised because it was described to me as that, right? And I was actually relieved, right? Because if we are a cloud first company, cloud native company, right? And we're also a product technology company, right? So most product technology companies don't have a CIO, right? And they usually, right, all product engineering and security and IT falls under the purview of a CTO. And we want that CTO to be focused on the growth of the engineering discipline and the product development, right? And not necessarily be focused on IT. So I was actually pleasantly surprised and quite relieved to have it because there are so many implications towards security if you don't have a good IT practice, right? And so plus also other business compliance requirements and frameworks that we have to abide to require a mature IT program and being a CISO of the company, right? Like having to directly face those things and being able to influence the roadmap of these teams and makes a lot of sense, right? So it's good. But being a cloud first company, it's awesome having an IT team in that environment because it's, but it creates some challenges as well. So it leads for a lot more automation, a lot more IT engineering, right? So it's actually a lot of fun work than I guess traditional four-walled IT team I've seen also in other companies, right? So it's a lot of learnings and a lot of fun. So I'm learning a lot through it because I've never overseen IT before, right? Obviously, my teams have always been close to IT, but being a part of having it report to me, it's been fun and a lot of learning experience for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recall, you know, in my time at Twitter, it didn't report to me there either, but they were one of the teams we worked with, you know, extensively. And what I really love about this idea of having them report to the same structure is it takes the two elements that are balancing acts and forces them into the same leader. So they have to figure it out. So IT is largely all about like, let's make this easy and usable for the company. And on the other side, security is like, well, it's gotta be secure. And of course there's a spectrum here. And when they report in different parts of the organization, you can have people butting heads like, nope, we can't do the security. It's not usable enough. When it's reporting in one org, like, all right, let's figure out what the middle ground is. And I think I like that. I think that's a really neat approach.
Yeah, and you know, my philosophy of security is that yes, it has to be secure, but it also has to be usable, right? So I think having both teams report, then you organize for that mindset and that skill set across the entire organization. Yeah. So I think it enables the communication and the processes too, right? So yeah, it's a lot of fun to have that.
Nice, very cool. So you mentioned a few times that you are very much a cloud first company. And you've probably been heavily exposed to that through your previous roles at Hulu as well. But it's no doubt a migration that companies are making, and perhaps one you made in your transitions dramatically as well. How is this shift to cloud changing your way of thinking about security? Are there things that are totally thrown out of the window and you have to reimagine from scratch, or other processes or technologies that you're leaning heavily on now because of the cloud reality?
Yeah, I mean, it's a moving to cloud native solutions like SaaS and cloud platforms and providers. Like, there is some operational risk that you're taking, right, from a company, right? Now you rely on somebody else's availability and continuity for you, for your business to continue as well, right? So there's that, right? So I think that was a big awareness in my career when companies were transitioning to more cloud services is, holy crap, now we don't have control of this, right? Like, how comfortable are we with and how much have we evaluated those capabilities from this vendor? Second to it is, you know, there's a shared responsibility model, right? And I know this is a term coined by one particular provider, but I think it applies across the board where, you know, a SaaS platform is going to provide you a service, but it's up to you to actually utilize it very well, right? They're not, you know, if you're a G Suite shop and you're allocating 20,000 licenses, like, the vendor's not going to come back to you and say, hey, by the way, you're only using 100. Like, are you sure you want to pay me for 20,000? Like, that never happens, right? And nor do I think it should. But so the responsibility is on you as a company to drive those efficiencies. Third to that is the data security aspect, right? Where now you have data that before, you know, you had the controls or at least the comfort of providing only a certain entryway into where your data is. And now it's available technologically available from any device anywhere in the world because it's in the clouds on the internet, right? Sure, you have access controls or you should have access controls and all those things. But before, you relied on that separation more so than the actual access and authorization controls. Now you sort of don't have that anymore, and you have to worry more about access controls, which, going to IT and everything, it means that you have to have a good IT and engineering hygiene to make sure that you're authorized, given access to these applications to the right people. You're looking at those. You have, you know, things like single sign-on, multi-factor. So there's a lot more to it than before. And I think fourth to it, to that is what cloud services enable is that now you have before in a brick and mortar shop, you had IT sort of owning the technological decisions, technology decisions for the organization. Now in a cloud world, you can have marketing go get their own technology. You have sales getting their own technology. You have finance getting their own technology and HR as well. So you have to now partner with those teams more where the decision-making is coming from them, not you. And you're only there to make sure that they're doing it effectively and securely, right? So it changes the responsibility model internally as well. So it's a lot of interesting challenges, right? But ultimately, I think it wins. To me, it's a win because it puts the responsibility where it goes, right? Of if I'm finance and I want to get an ERP or what have you, and HR, then I should be allowed to make the decision of what system things I think meets my need. It's your job to make sure it's secure and you know, it's IT's and security's job to make sure it's secure and efficient, but I now have a say. Whereas before, you know, you had IT teams making those decisions. So that's been the learning, but the data security aspect is obviously, you know, companies like yours are in the space for that, right? Because it is a difficult problem to solve, right? It can carry a lot of legs and it's hard to keep track of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, going back to what you said before, where we're using the same fundamental problems, but just in different ways. We're solving the same fundamental problems.
Yep.
Like now, what I heard in what you're saying there is all about access control, just in the new paradigm of this self-serve cloud world. Like you said, the marketing team can go self-serve themselves with whatever technology choice they want. And then how do we do access control and authentication here? Similarly in the data context, moving from this centralized model where IT controls every gate to now every employee controls the gate. Like, you want access to this? Sure, I'll give it to you, Bob. There you go. You got access. So lots more empowerment, which is great. But I think all of us in our security minds can say, all right, I see how that can go wrong. It really pushes us on this trust but verify, this kind of second pass approach. Because we know we can't go to these cloud systems and just say, all right, well, if you want to share a document, you just got to submit a ticket and wait 2 weeks. Like, that would not go well for anyone.
Yeah. And I think adding to that complexity, right, to your point of being able to gain visibility into what's there is in a centralized model or in a corporate world, right, pre-cloud, all you had to worry about was like, are my syslogs making it to a central place and can we see them, right, and detect? All these providers, they're not sending you logs. You got to hit their APIs now, right? So you got to have API to API integration. So that requires, that forces security engineer and IT to have an engineering presence to be able to cope with that, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to have any visibility or ability to respond to things.
Yeah. You triggered something for me. Isn't it crazy that for security to even have a chance, we have to get engineering involved and build something custom? And we say it here on the West Coast because, sure, we can do that. But think of what we're saying to the rest of the country, the rest of the world. Like, you want to have a secure company. You want to go build your widgets. You want to go sell your thing. Oh, you got to find engineers inside of security to connect wires because we can't just give you security that works on its own. That has been like a sticking point for me. And I think I've seen it more in the last many years in Silicon Valley on the West Coast. Like, we just have this different world where, sure, we'll throw engineers at the problem. That's like not fair. The rest of the country and world doesn't have that luxury. And man, we have a long way to go.
We do. And I think it's part of the reason is, you know, engineering practices have sort of evolved way faster than I think security practices have, right? And also engineering solutions or technology that engineers want to use are way more advanced than security technology. You still have companies that will sell you products that are, to solve problems back in that corporate brick and mortar world where it doesn't apply. So we're in a world where now the buyer and the seller are both, I forget that paper, right? But that says that both the buyer and the seller are now uninformed about the actual capability of the product or technology that you're buying, right? So you're making a lot of bets and putting your neck out there in this decision. So, but yeah, you know, there are industries that do not have the luxury or cannot hire the engineering resources that, let's say, Silicon Valley can, right? Or technology companies. So absolutely, we got to find something that works across the world. And like you said, I think we're years away from figuring that out.
Well, plenty of work to be done, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So when you look back at the journey you've taken, perhaps the pitfalls you've made, the things that you figured out that have worked, what would you say to someone else who's a few years in their security career and says, I want to move into a leadership role in security. I want to really grow my impact in that way. What advice do you have from them from where you've been?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I always advise, and I might be an unpopular opinion in this, to focus more on leadership lessons, right? And read books around leadership, communication, understanding the psychology of the other side, right? One day, if nothing has been written so far about it, one day I'll have time, hopefully, to kind of map the Maslow's like hierarchy of needs to how you actually drive influence from a security standpoint to an organization. But think about it, right? If you join an organization and let's say they can't even keep their own applications up and running efficiently, going in there and saying, oh, but we're also not secure, isn't really going to move the needle, right? Help them solve that problem. And by the way, and by solving that problem, you're also solving security problems as well, right? So I will say read more about leadership and communication and how to work with teams and partner with not just your team, but external teams, then, you know, learn security skill sets. And I'm not saying ignore security skill sets, but to me, it's more about learning how to work with others versus how to work with your own teams. Like, you can always hire people who are going to say yes to everything you say and work with you well. But then when you open the door to talk to the team next door, everything falls, right? And then what's the influence and what's the impact? So focus more about leadership. There's a bunch of books that I've read and greatly recommend, but there's one that is a very tiny book that's called The Right Thing to Say, I believe it is. It's actually very eye-opening, right? Because it talks about, instead of starting a sentence with this, start it with this way, and here's the psychological impact that your audience is going to get or go through. It was really eye-opening. So think about those things, how you communicate with people and how that message gets received by others.
Wow. Yeah, I agree. When I look back at my time at Twitter and I talk about the role, the biggest things I say that matter are exactly that. Like understanding the importance of psychology, understanding incentive structures. People will do what you incentivize them to do. So yep. If they're going to go complete their team's OKRs and you're not in it, you shouldn't be surprised that they don't do any of your work. In the book you suggested, like, that makes sense. Like, if the notion of why does starting a sentence a different way even matter at all, like there's a lot to unpack there that will help you. Because, man, the ability to have empathy and understanding for other leaders, it goes a long way. I think the companies that have shedded this notion of the security team of no and have moved into the, like, how can we help have the business be successful, they go a lot longer, a lot farther.
Yeah, and that notion, right, that stigma of no or being a gate, it's something that, A, you have to, you know, it's a lot easier if you admit to yourself of the fact that that's how people see you, right? And you know, sort of like take a prove them wrong mindset. Don't be surprised when that is the reception that you get from other teams, especially when you join an organization as a new person. And work on changing that, right? And absolutely, right? Like, you know, understanding how they get incentivized, but also understanding the pressure that those teams are going through as well, right? So security teams have the pressure of, like, we want to make sure we don't get breached, right? When in reality, security teams, you have the pressure of keeping a good risk management portfolio, right? But also understand that the teams that you're talking to are dealing with external pressures as well. So if you're talking to a product development team, well, they have features that they promise to customers to be done by the end of the quarter. And if you're going there a week before the end of the quarter with security things, you're not going to be a priority. And those things should have been addressed beforehand, right? So understand that. And I know it's frustrating, right? So, you know, the topic of burnout gets discussed a lot, right? In security. And you know, I don't want to dismiss it because I think it's very real. Because you do have organizations that do not support security at all, right? And it can be very toxic. But I wonder how much of that burnout is also self-inflicted, because we want to keep a breach zero mindset and worry about that all day. And instead of thinking about, you know what, this team is not that they're ignoring us or they don't care about us. It's like they have other priorities. So how do we work with them to make sure that ours get accounted for? And maybe, like I said, if they're dealing with a systemic issue, we work on that and then we work on the other thing, right? So that's, again, it might be unpopular, right? But I wonder if that's part of the reason why security professionals get burned out as well, because they only think about security.
Yeah, I think you've opened a topic we could spend a whole nother session on. And I think you coined it in a way that's great. I haven't heard it before, but like the breach zero mindset, that's wrong. And it's natural to pursue that. Yeah. It's because you put the weight, all of the responsibility and the weight on your own shoulders. Like, there cannot be a breach anywhere. I am the sole defender of this. My head's on the chopping block. And that's not realistic. Like, you can't have a business where one person is responsible for all risk. Because if so, they have to be running around approving or not approving every decision, which obviously can't work either.
Right. Or you will be a company that doesn't grow or move, right? Because a risk zero company is a non-moving company, right? Might as well shut everything down and close the door. So yeah. But you know, it's funny because a lot of times I've seen where the business gets that, right? Where security teams or risks are a way of business, but you still see security teams that have that breach zero mindset and they keep pushing for it, right? And I understand the pressure, right? Because it could be like something happens, the security team security team is always gonna get asked, why did this happen? And what you need to do, I think, is focus more on damage reduction than on avoidance of that breach, right? Because again, these are risks, but if you detect it and you can mitigate it and you can contain it, then you did your part, right? I think that's that's how I value security, more so than the did it happen or not. And focus more on that, which is actually something that most security teams have more control of, at least from a process standpoint, versus worrying about why isn't that team who has a priority by the end of the quarter isn't talking to me a week before the end of the quarter, right?
Definitely. Well, Emilio, we covered a lot of good ground. Anything that we might have missed that you wanted to make sure to get out there?
I think going to the leadership conversation, one thing that I guess I wanted to bring up and hopefully get questions now or later or comments and insults or what have you, but it's on the security leadership side, right? I saw a thread on Twitter from Leslie, Hacks for Pancakes, talk about how somebody who's junior at InfoSec had approached her on the management culture and the toxic environment that person was going through. And I pay close attention to it, right? Because again, with everything that we've said so far about leadership and how I think about it and being about the people, it's easy for people who are in a deeply technical skill set to get thrown into managers because, oh, you've been a senior for a couple of years, therefore you can be a manager. Yep. And not really transitioning from like, A, when you're a leader or a manager to the team, that's how people are going to see you. Even though you've worked with these people maybe for 3 or 4 or 5 years, you're now the manager, you're the leader. They're going to look up to you as a leader. So things that you say, how you interact, how you joke with the team, they're not going to mean the same thing as a joke as they used to maybe a couple of months prior before you being a manager. Now you're the manager, right? So you're holding their livelihood on your hands as a manager, right? And their employment status with you. But also making sure to understand that your job is to grow them, not to grow yourself, right? I forget what book it was, but I remember reading this book that said that a leader gets evaluated or should be evaluated by the output or of the team and the contributions of the team, not the individual contributions of the leader themselves. Mm-hmm. So thinking about that naturally leads to you want to grow your people because you want the team to be better because therefore you look better by indirect involvement there. And that thread called out for like people not getting performance reviews or not getting feedback from managers, right? That's really concerning, right? Because I don't know if it's a trend across the industry, and something I wanted to throw out as an open topic that hopefully will draw more discussion is it an industry trend or maybe an individual example? But just be aware that you're a technologist and now a leader, like you're there to grow your people and they should be aware of where they stand performance-wise and they should be praised publicly. And that your job as a leader, in my opinion, is to grow them, even if it means that they're growing you, right? And that should be a good sign of a good leader. And you shouldn't be afraid of that. But I wanted to throw it out there because I saw it on Twitter and it caught some traction there and a lot of comments, right? So I wanted to make sure I threw it there. And thank you for those industry members who get involved in leadership conversations and people go to for mentorship and all these conversations, right? Because I can put myself in the shoes of a junior person in this industry, which is a very difficult industry to get into and very intimidating as well. And not having a voice to be heard can be extremely difficult. So give him a shout out.
Yeah, it seems like an interesting reality for the security field. I mean, clearly there is management and leadership in every field, of course. But the transition that I've seen in the security field is years ago, you would get a CISO that we brought in that would be more of a traditional leader but they'd be coming from a different discipline. So you get a business leader, maybe you get somebody from legal, and they wouldn't understand the nuances or the fundamentals of security. So they wouldn't have as much appreciation for it. And I'm seeing that shift. I'm seeing now the new batch of CISOs have come from the technical track. So they have the foundation, they've made the leadership jump. But now the challenge we have is exactly what you said, which is sometimes you get the most technical person who's been around, like, all right, you're the manager now. Maybe you're not the CISO, but you're a manager of a team, you're a director. Yeah. And that is a fundamental shift. I've had people explain it to me, like, going from a IC engineer to a manager of engineers is a new job. And so you should be investing all the time you invested in university or certifications or self-study. Think of that all again. And you mentioned earlier this notion of why, and that reminded me of a really good video. I think it's a TED Talk and it's called Start With Why. And yeah. as a leader trying to motivate your team and organize, like, that's fascinating. And man, when I worked at Mozilla, we had plenty of experiments and different rapid promotions that showed some of these problems, to put it clearly. A few people who were there went off. So Jonathan and Melissa Nightingale, they went off and built, I think, a company, but also wrote a book called How Effed Up Is Your Management? And man, is that a good book to read. If you find yourself in a Silicon Valley company, a high tech company, and you're like, something's not right here. I love that book. And it really gets to some good points that you mentioned as well.
Oh, I will definitely give that a read. Thanks for that. Yeah. Yeah. It always excites me to read about management and, you know, even older books like Andy Grove's High Output Management, right? I think mm-hmm. it's a great book to read, and crazy that it was written, you know, when it was written, and it's still, a lot of it still applies, right? And it's pretty amazing. That tells you that there is a philosophy and a framework behind this that we should be paying closer attention to, right? It's like the law of physics are the law of physics because they actually are impactful and meaningful, right? And truth. I wanted to give that a shout out because, like I said, it was a lot of activity on that thread, and heard from and saw other people chiming in about, like, they're going through the same thing where their value, you know, their contributions are not valued enough. They're not given feedback in time. And it's pretty scary because considering everything we just talked about, how difficult security sort of had to evolve to meet engineering and the business where it needs to be. If you have poor management within security, then it just makes that outcome so much more difficult, yeah. Right? And for sure, you know, most likely that kind of environment leads to, like, being a gate or a team of no, of naysayers, right? And just being a toxic across the organization. So definitely my call is to, we need to have more leadership training when it comes to, you know, if you look at security certifications, I don't know of any certification that actually focuses on leadership and growth, right? Everything is leading security from a policy standpoint or building a roadmap, right? Or governance. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there is any certification or training that talks about how to become a good leader in this very, a field that can be very highly technical.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. We can certainly look at leadership training across the board, but we need to purposely go out and find it. It's a gap that needs to be discussed a lot more.
It's a great point. Absolutely.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Emilio. It seems like it's time to go and refill our coffees. I know we could otherwise chat for hours here, but the chocolate house here is asking for last call.
Yeah, the staff is telling us either buy something or leave. So I totally get it.
Yeah, that woman over your shoulder has been looking at you for a while. So
yeah. I don't know what that means. We'll get another coffee.
That's right. Awesome. Well, thanks everybody for joining. And thanks so much, Emilio. Really appreciate it. If you've enjoyed this webcast, we have many more of them coming, many more on the website. There's a podcast available if that's your style. So hope that you tune in and keep fighting the good fight, everybody. The security field is a big, challenging area and lots of work to do for us all.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me. And look forward to any future conversations. This was fun. Thank you.
Great.